Welcome to Eating is a Lifestyle with registered dietitians Toby Page
and Meredith Kleinhens. If you are stressed about food and nutrition, we are here for you. We will talk about real life examples of how to eat well and enjoy life with food.
Along the way, we'll break down stigmatizing diet culture. We'll share our stories and evidence-based information so you can make the best decisions for yourself and the ones you love. This podcast is not intended to replace medical advice, and we strongly recommend you talk to a registered dietitian if you have any concerns about your diet or your relationship with food.
Thank you for joining us.
So, hey, thank you so much for joining me on the Eating is a Lifestyle podcast, Dr. Seitz. I'm excited to talk with you. Today we have Dr. Brian Seitz, who is a chiropractor and has been for 35 years. Dr. Seitz happens to be my chiropractor, and I've just asked him to come on this show because of all the chiropractors that I have seen in my time, I really appreciate the knowledge that I really felt comfortable when I went in to get adjusted. And basically, the story was that I had hurt my SI joints trying to be overly ambitious out on the trail. And I was in a lot of pain. And so I showed up on Dr. Seitz's door and said, yikes, I've got a big problem. I don't know what to do. And I just appreciated how you took the time to kind of explain to me what was going on and help me understand what you were going to do because it was a big, large area that was in a lot of pain. And I appreciated that. And how gently you were with me, because I was a little apprehensive about, oh no, it's going to hurt. And so I just think you're a great chiropractor, and I thank you so much for coming on my show.
Well, that was very nice. Thank you very much. And I do really try to come in slow with people because people are afraid. And there's a big fear of pain. And, you know, they're in the office for pain management, help me type of stuff, but they're also afraid I'm going to make them hurt more. So we go in slow generally.
Yeah, you know, it's like, I'm already in pain. I don't want you to hurt me more. I know it's gonna for a second.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it's, for me, it's the surprise. It's the snake bite. It's the, I know it's gonna hurt, the ripping the Band-Aid off kind of idea.
Absolutely. It's like if I go in and have to get a venipuncture, you know, that don't want to get poked with that needle, but you're going to get poked with that needle. And then, you know what, it wasn't that bad. So I think it's similar to that.
It wasn't so bad. And then now I'm feeling better.
Good.
So welcome to our show. If we could just learn a little bit more about you as a person first, and then I would love to just ask you some questions about being a chiropractor and how our listeners can, you know, understand the world of chiropractic a little bit more and how it might help them. So outside of being a chiropractor, what kind of things do you enjoy doing?
Well, I like to be active, and I used to love to play basketball, which I did up until I was like 55, and that's not in the cards anymore. I used to mountain bike a lot. I mountain bike a little now because I personally have a little hip issue, so it's challenging, but I like to be active, and I like to be handy, and I've always liked to be handy. So that means projects, you know, remodeling, tearing things down just to put them back together, that type of thing. So it's kind of a problem solving thing, which kind of is what I like about chiropractic too. It's a problem solving thing.
So problem solving and tearing things down and putting them back together. How is chiropractic like tearing things down and putting them back together?
Well, people come to chiropractors, generally speaking, because they hurt, like you were hurt. And you, as an individual, are in pretty good shape and you're pretty healthy. And that's probably because your diet and lifestyle. Okay. A lot of people come in to me, and this is even greater now than it was 35 years ago when I started. People aren't as healthy as they used to be. People are heavier than they used to be. people don't exercise as much as they used to be. And, you know, we were talking the last visit about acute inflammation and the use of ibuprofen and other non-steroidal anti-inflammatory things. And I cautioned that inflammation is good, but inflammation is not so good if it's in excess or it's chronic. And I see a lot of patients that are chronically inflamed, and trying to get to, you know, why they're chronically inflamed. You know, I have my, you know, biases and preconceptions when I see a patient, but trying to figure out what might help them with that pro-inflammation or chronic inflammation. And a lot of it comes back to what you do. It's a diet and lifestyle. And I spent some time, and I listened to your podcast about your origin story for, you know, the Big Four. And, you know, it resonated with me. I don't talk about it in that way. I basically talk about it in, let's eat real food, you know, let's actually cook. You know, I think one of the things that COVID has done toward the detriment is DoorDash. People are getting so much stuff delivered to their door. And the problem with that stuff is we don't know what's in that stuff. It looks like food, but tastes good.
Well, I mean, I know what's in that stuff, right? And I can say, to speak towards the inflammation piece, what's in that stuff that causes inflammation are those polyunsaturated fats. Mm-hmm. So we do actually know what is in the food that's leading to inflammation. We understand how it works and everything. But you're right. There's a ton of DoorDash happening.
And we understand it, but people don't, you know, or they don't care to. I don't know what it specifically is. One of the things I like to have my patients do, if I think that's something, or they're willing to go down that highway, is to do an omega-3 index test. It's really cheap, and it gives you a really good indication of whether you're consuming too much omega-6 fatty acids, which, you know, are inflammatory.
Well, I don't know about this test. Is this a test that you ask your doctor for?
Well, you could, but unfortunately, traditional medicine isn't, for the most part, along those lines. It's a test you can get through a lot of different things. It's online. It's very well, what's the word for it? Its efficacy is well proven. And it gives you a ratio between your omega-3 and your omega-6 fatty acids. And it's like a $50 test for the most simplest form. And you can do it without a doctor's recommendation. But again, it's simple, it's easy. It gives you a number, and you can shoot to improve that number. And you can
Yeah. I'm just wondering how we would get our hands on this. Is this something Amazon sells?
You know, they may. There's a company called Omega Quant, which is really good. I would encourage you to just go there and get a lot of information. And they do other, you know, blood tests as well, like and this blood spot testing, like vitamin D. So, you know, I think vitamin D testing is an incredible thing. Again, inflammatory, but you ask your doctor to order it and they say, okay. And it's a $250 test. You know, it's like, really?
Yeah.
It's a $50 test. Why are we charging so much?
Well, let's definitely link that in the show notes to that site. So I'll make sure to grab that from you, because I know that a lot of people are doing more, you know, taking their health more into their hands, doing a lot more of this testing through the mail, you know, prick your finger and tap it here and send it in, or other substances get sent in the mail, and learning a lot more about who they are as individuals. So that's kind of the cool new science. But I love to hear that we can test some of these things
and get it from
so easily.
Get it from a good quality company. You know, there's probably other companies out there that aren't going to be so good, but I trust like Omega Quant, and there's other ones available too.
All right. I'm always sending people to consumerlab.com for checking out supplements. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if they're going to show up this company, but I'll go with your recommendation on this company. All right. So yeah, you are a believer in healthy eating and that inflammation is probably the root cause of a lot of conditions that you're currently seeing in your office.
Or complicating, you know.
Or at least complicating them.
Yeah.
And so here you are, the chiropractor, trying to treat the pain, and then the person's going home and just living in inflammation constantly.
Yeah.
If there was one thing that you could tell people to start doing differently, what would you tell them?
Okay, I'm gonna put it in a phrase that I learned back in the 90s when I went through some seminars. Eat well. Think well, move well. Okay, so eat well comes back to basically what you do.
Mm-hmm.
But think well, I mean, our mood affects our health. Our health affects our mood. So it's obviously interchangeable. And the move well is, you know, like I'm sitting on a chair right now. I know if I sit on a chair for too long, I'm not moving very well. Just get up and move. You know, you don't have to go, you know, take 10,000 steps. You don't have to run 4 miles. You just need to get up and move. And a lot of us don't. We drive to work, we sit in a chair, we get DoorDash, and we don't really think of movement as an important part of life, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. And first of all, I really love the vagueness of that, because it's not prescriptive, and I'm all about not prescribing. You know, this is how much you're supposed to eat or not eat, and just saying, hey, move. You know, move more. Move your body as a general sense. And it reminded me of a study that was done years and years ago down at Oregon State University, where they were studying insulin resistance and the effect of moving your body. And so they took folks and they had them just sit down like they normally would, and they measured their insulin resistance. Then they were able to say, okay, let's have you stand up for 30 minutes and we're going to measure your insulin resistance. Well, it improved by like 5%. Just because they were standing and not sitting. And they were like, wow, what if these people went for a walk? You know, what if they went for a walk for 30 minutes? What would happen to their insulin sensitivity? Well, it improved by 18%. It was like, gosh, all they did was get up and walk for a half an hour. And so I love to share that as evidence for people to, you know, eat your lunch and get outside and go for a walk, even if it's raining.
It's something I used to say, but I don't say it much because I think it just never resonated. But, you know, we're on this earth and we're genetically designed to be hunter gatherers, right? And so that means we get up and move, and then we sleep, and then we abruptly get up and move, running away from something. And that's fight or flight, you know, but we dissipate the bad things of the fight or flight because we're fleeing, right? But you sit around and you're getting stressed out, you're getting all fighty, but you're not fleeing or anything. You're just producing more cortisol. You're just breaking down. And, you know, I used to say this to people a lot, and people just looked at me like, what are you talking about? You know, but it's so simple to me. It's just, we are designed, we're designed to move and to, again, eat food we obtain through hunting and gathering, right? We haven't evolved much from that, but our food sources certainly have evolved, like in the last 50 years especially.
Right, so, with the polyunsaturated fats
and just what's in the food, you know, the
processed out,
you know,
plants,
fertilizers and petrochemicals and all that stuff. I was born in 1961. I was a product of the food tech generation. You know, You got Jell-O, you got Cool Whip, you know, you've got TV dinners, you know, margarine, hey, all that good stuff. And my parents, who were of the Depression, you know, born in the Depression, you know, when I was young, we ate that stuff. But my parents both worked, and my mom figured out that that wasn't necessarily the best for us. And she worked evenings a lot. So I had to learn how to cook. I was the youngest, but I cooked a lot when I was, you know, 9, 10 years old. And then my mom kind of, we moved up to Oregon when I was 12. And she kind of came back to her roots, and she was early on a gardener. We had the biggest garden. I hated that garden. It was just weeding all the time, but we had a garden. She gleaned, she canned all the time. She ate organic stuff, which was like unheard of in the 70s. But that's where I probably got a lot of it from her, even though I didn't want to, you know, weed the garden or anything like that. But they're both passed now, but my mom lived till she was 90. My dad was 92. And when they died, you know, my dad took a little bit of thyroid hormone, and my mom had rheumatoid arthritis at the end, so she was on prednisone. But those were the medications they took.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I appreciate that you, you know, you're talking about being over 55 and being so active. And, you know, for folks that aren't so active, which is, you know, a lot of people, especially in the over 55 community, because it hurts.
Yep.
Right? Your body hurts when you get older.
Yeah, it does, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not, you know, I just know that. I know I'm not over 55, but I know it's coming, and things are just a little achier, and muscles are maybe not as strong, right? Because if we don't move, then the muscles have no reason to really stick around.
Start feeling prophecy.
So yeah, so mobility can be difficult and painful for somebody who's maybe over 55 and hasn't been active.
Yeah.
What should they do? How can they get started in a safe way?
Well, and the irony is, if you move, even if it hurts to move, you will have less pain, generally speaking. Again, you also want to address those inflammatory things subtly somehow, you know, it, you know, 9 months out of the year, 6 months out of the year, maybe you should be supplementing with vitamin D, stuff like that. But if you get up and move, one of the most powerful things about movement is mechanoreceptor stimulation. You move any part of your body, you are stimulating things called mechanoreceptors. And those mechanoreceptors send their information on nerves that are bigger than pain nerves. So they have priority over pain when you're moving, because mechanoreceptors tell your brain where your body is, tell your brain where you are. And that's pretty important. Otherwise, you're going to fall down or run into a wall or whatever. So it will have priority over that pain. And getting people to understand that, and getting them to move a little bit more. Yeah, after a week or 2 weeks, yeah, I do hurt less. It doesn't kill pain, but you hurt less and you become slowly more functional, more strong. And that's what my job really is. I find dysfunction and I try to improve function, whatever that means.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because, you know, I went to see you for this pain. It turned out to be my SI joint. I was afraid that you were going to have to pop it back into place, as if it had popped out of place, and that I was walking around with this SI joint, like, not connected properly.
Just hanging out from the side of your body, right?
Yeah. And it's like, that's why it was so painful. So it made sense to me. But you helped me understand that it wasn't that I had something out of place, but the way that chiropractic works, I don't know. That's always what I think of, like, oh, I have a rib out. You hear people say that too. I have a rib out. So what's this? What's going
90% of
on?
The people coming into me say something like that. And I should have a t-shirt that says, has a, you know, no thing on it. And there's boop in back of it. Boop means bone out of place. We don't deal with boop. you can have a bone out of place. That's called a dislocation. We deal in what chiropractic calls subluxation, but our definition of subluxation is different than the medical definition. The medical definition for subluxation is a partial dislocation. The chiropractic definition is, it's a huge definition, it's vague, but basically I call it segmental dysfunction. So joints of the spine are called segmental joints. The sacroiliac joints are not segmental joints. They're sacroiliac joints. They're a big diathyroidal joint. Rib joints are little tiny synovial joints that are like knuckles. What happens to them? Well, you may sprain a joint. Okay, that's a soft tissue injury, but when you do that, then you go into muscle spasm, and then you may create a fixated joint. So a segmental dysfunction is generally a stuck joint, but there may have been injury to the joint. There may not have been. It may have just been you woke up and you were in a, you know, a position for a long time and you got stuck somehow. A rib, quote, came, popped out. No, it didn't. It got jammed and stuck, and now you have a muscle spasm over, and it really hurts. Hurts to breathe, you know. What do? You go in and you get it put back in. Well, no, you didn't. You got the joint unlocked and now you got range of motion. And if there is some inflammation there, it then will hopefully resolve through the lymphatics and life is good again. So again, people come in with this bone out of place, and here's that kind of correlates with safety. If I, as a chiropractor, am not putting a bone back in place, but merely restoring motion, doesn't that sound a little bit safer?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because what we do as chiropractors is work within normal range of motion, but you come in and you're not normal. You're not moving through a range of motion at a particular joint. All I do is put in enough force to make it move in its normal range. And if I go beyond normal range, that's called a sprain. So I better not do that, because that's iatrogenesis or doctor cause. And I don't want to do that. So if I'm actually doing my job the way I'm supposed to do my job, I'm really, really safe. And most chiropractors are. There's exceptions to every rule.
Right, right. I know. And I think the only time I've ever gone to a chiropractor is by referral. Somebody else saying, oh, this person's really good. I'm pretty sure we found you because my neighbor was working with you and said, oh, this guy's good. So, okay. We found somebody good to go to and felt comfortable about that. But can you tell us how maybe what to look for in a good chiropractor?
Well, you know, what you just said, get referrals from friends. But then when you go there, just experience it. And if it doesn't resonate with you, go find someone else. Yeah. You know, the thing that I've heard about people, well, my cousin's friend's buddy went to a chiropractor and broke his back, so I'm never going to go to a chiropractor. Well, first of all, that's an urban legend. But would you do that with medicine? You know, I went to a chiropractor. He was terrible, or a medical doctor. He was terrible. I'm never going to see another medical doctor.
Right.
I mean, it's this double standard that I really have a hard time with, but it's real.
You know, I never really thought about it that way, because, you know, what you're saying is that every, you know, like every chiropractor works the exact same and there's never anything wrong. Well, in the medical field, we have a lot of complaints about doctors doing things wrong and, you know, bad outcomes all the time in the medical world.
Overprescribing, underprescribing, doing wacky things, you know, it's okay. You go find another MD if that one doesn't work.
But the chiropractors have been fighting this for a long time, because my grandfather was a medical doctor. Mm-hmm. And so I remember being a child and hearing him say, you know, never go to a chiropractor.
You know why that was? because the AMA had a policy and they had a committee on anti-quackery, which was basically, let's eliminate chiropractors. If you want to read something interesting, Google Wilk et al. It's basically when the AMA was found guilty of trying to contain and eliminate chiropractic, and they were ordered to allow their members to refer to chiropractors. Before that, it was unethical in medicine to refer to a chiropractor.
Wow. Okay. Well, we'll link that one too. That's, you know, I love a good controversy in medicine.
The AMA has still not fully complied with the judge's orders, but that was 1984.
Very, so, very interesting.
Yeah. So it's interesting. You know, osteopaths and chiropractors had a similar origin story. Same time in the late 1800s. The difference was after the Flexner Report, which was something in the early 1900s, osteopaths chose to kind of come into medicine, okay? They still maintained their manual methods and more holistic views at that point, but they became practitioners that used pharmaceuticals, which was a very growing thing. Prior to early 1900s, medicine was not regulated. There was a lot of, quote, quackery. There was a lot of snake oil, stuff like that. So to clear that up, this Flexner Report made recommendations. And one of them was, we got to clean up medical education. And so they created stringent requirements. And those that fell out of that were no longer, quote, doctors. Chiropractic chose to be autonomous, and osteopathy eventually chose to be medically oriented. You can still go to an osteopath to this day and get manual medicine. They teach in their curriculum, they teach manipulation, but it's primarily elective type courses. So they just get a taste of it. The vast majority of osteopaths no longer go down that road. They are, in essence, medical doctors, but it's DO rather than MD. And they go to the same, through the same residencies, you know, they take the same tests, they get the same license. They're medical doctors. It just says DO on their license. But they still have a little bit of manual medicine in their mix.
Okay, but if we're going to a chiropractor, that's going to be more of a specialist.
Look, chiropractors, we're kind of we're like cats, you know, we're all a bit different. So again, you need to find what resonates with you, but at its core, we learn to manipulate what I'm going to call segmental dysfunction or subluxation for the purpose of restoring motion function to that area. And that may have other effects. Okay, those other effects are where it kind of diverges, you know. Are we going to affect the nervous system? In fact, we do affect the nervous system, but it's not predictable, and it's not, I'm going to adjust T7 and make your kidneys work. You know, it doesn't really work that way, but if you're chronically inflamed in your thoracolumbar region, you may have poor digestion. You may, because in that irritation, you may be irritating sympathetic nerves. You may have an effect on the vagus nerve. You know, things like that happen. So if we make you function better, you might actually globally function better. But I'm not going to make those promises.
Right. Well, but I think, you know, a lot of people that I talk to are looking for, you know, the optimal health. I want to be optimally healthy. And, you know, I'm moving my body. I'm eating, you know, foods I recognize that came from the ground. And I'm, you know, taking time to go for peaceful walks and managing my mental health. But there are a lot of GI stuff, GI disorders going around. And you mentioned the vagus nerve, which I wanted to talk with you about because this is where chiropractic and nutrition come together, right? Like through the vagus nerve. The vagus nerve, for anyone who doesn't know this, it's not Vegas like Las Vegas, but it's sounds like it. The vagus nerve, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but starts up in the brain and the brainstem and goes down and literally connects to every organ in our digestive system, including the pancreas, the liver, the kidneys, just kind of touches all those things, including the stomach and intestines. And so, can you talk a little bit about how the vagus nerve is affected by chiropractic and how that can interrelate with maybe someone's nutrition, not necessarily their diet of what they're eating, but their nutrition that they absorb or process?
First of all, the vagus nerve, and this is something I just was exposed to, so I'm going to paraphrase poorly, but the vagus nerve is kind of like the software for the brain, which is the processor. Okay. So, what the vagus nerve is for, primarily, not entirely, it's to calm things down, it's to slow things down. And we're under total assault in today's world from everything, computers, Instagram, nutrition, work stress, all that is stimulating that fight or flight response. Well, the vagus is supposed to be the thing that kind of chills us down and slows us down. But it's getting overwhelmed. So we have to do things to stimulate the vagus nerve, which is actually relaxing the body. So how do we do that? Good nutrition is part of it. You can directly affect the vagus nerve through manual work in the upper to mid cervical region. It's very nonspecific, I guess. You can activate the vagus nerve by breathing techniques. By cold water immersion, which is not something I'm going to do because I don't like that. But it supposedly does great stuff. Like saunas and then do a cold water immersion. I recently made a sauna at home, one of my projects for my wife. But anyway, last night we did a sauna and I did do a cold water immersion up to my belly button for about 70 seconds. And you know what? It's not fun. It really, but it's supposed to be good. So I'll try it and see where it hits me.
I actually listened to a great podcast. I don't know if you're familiar with the Huberman Lab
I am.
podcast.
Yeah.
And he did one on the cold, on why we, what benefits do we get out of this cold
Yeah.
plunge? So if you're really wondering, you can go check it out.
I actually watched. There's some interesting thing I learned about him recently, but we're not going to talk about it here. But yeah, he has all sorts of hacks,
Yeah.
for but
So this so we were talking about stimulating the vagus nerve through I mean, does nutrition stimulate the nerve or does the nerve help us absorb our nutrition? It's kind of how I understood it.
yes, yeah,
Yeah,
it
all
well,
three.
yeah, things you didn't talk about when you said what does the vagus nerve do? It's called the vagus because it's a vagabond. It goes everywhere, essentially, right? It's the longest nerve in the body or something like that. It does both sympathetic and parasympathetic actions. It modulates heart rate, heart rhythm, breathing. It's involved both in sexual function, both from orgasm and erection. It's involved in all of that stuff. So again, healthy vagal tone is really a good thing. And something I have used in the past, and I didn't use it a lot, but it's auricular electrodes. that stimulate the auricular portion of the vagus nerve. But you got to put it on for like half an hour. And it is FDA approved for anxiety, not depression right now, anxiety and pain. And I've had like three different patients, and this was more like 10, 15 years ago, because I haven't used it recently because it's cumbersome and people need to buy it and go use it. But I had one 10-year-old, 9-year-old boy was obsessive and obsessive compulsive. And his parents were, you know, it was said, and I worked for 25 years in a interdisciplinary practice, medical physicians. And I saw this patient that was a patient of one of the medical physicians there. And mother said, well, is there anything you can do? And I said, well, you know, beyond manipulation, which I don't really think is what's going to make a difference, try this. And they had tremendous success with it. Now, they were very compliant. They were very diligent. But after 3 or 4 months, they had it, but they put it aside because he had really got a grasp on normalcy.
Calm down.
Yeah, it was very, very encouraging. And I had a couple other patients that, again, had more mental health challenges that I wasn't treating those per se. I was just, you know, offering this as a thing for them to try. And they had good success with it, you know, but that was, you know, 10, 15 years ago, and you know, it's $300-$400 device. People don't really want to spend that money. Today, $300 isn't as big a thing, but it's still a lot of money. But the problem with going through the auricular thing is, and I just learned this recently, actually, there's not as many fibers in those nuclei than in the ones here. So if you treat here with some type of transcutaneous thing, you may have to do it for 4 minutes as opposed to half an hour. And you're going to reach more, ultimately more neurons. So it's pretty cool. So there's actually a device I'm looking at right now, and I'll link to that later if you want me to, that I'm going to look at and just try it myself and see if it actually does anything. That stimulates the vagus nerve through transcutaneous current in the neck.
Wow. Yeah. Well, I do know that a lot of people experience a lot of anxiety. I don't think it's any surprise or any mystery that, like you're saying, our food has gotten more processed, we're more out of balance. Our microbiome is just really fizzling, and you know, our stressful lives keeping us in that fight or flight all the time. I mean, there's a lot of things in our life and our world that contribute to this inflammation and pain and things, and it's not always functional, structural. Yeah. It might be more holistic, like we're talking about with whole, you know, general inflammation showing up somewhere that hurts. We recently did in our Facebook group a breath and posture challenge. And it was really like the first challenge I'd done with the group because, you know, I'm the nutrition person, I'm the food person, I talk about food, I talk about the big four, balancing your meals, but that doesn't cure everything if the rest of our lives aren't supportive of the rest of everything, moving your body and having time to bring stress down. So as a holistic approach to pain and inflammation and living a healthy life, we know we want to eat well. And that means eat less processed food, more plants. I think that's pretty well accepted by across the board of all the all the people who know what they're talking about agree on those things. Move our bodies in a way that feels comfortable. If there's pain, chiropractic can help move things around, but we still got to go back and find the root of the inflammation and the cause.
Well, you just mentioned posture. Okay. So I'm going to turn sideways here. And what does that remind you of?
Me.
This or me. This. And when you see people come in to your, you know, counseling, when you see people coming into my practice, and this is them, we gotta do something about that. And they have to do something about that. And, you know, that comes back to, well, once you go see a chiropractor, you're always going to go see a chiropractor, you know, well, only if you need to, and only if you want to, you know, so all your decision. But because of a lifetime of this, you may be structurally stuck here. What are you doing up here? You're jamming everything together. That's upper cervical. That's brainstem area. You're really affecting something. What's happening down here? Well, you're doing the same thing. Your lungs are not expanding. You're not breathing. That's affecting vagus nerve for sure. So all of that is intertwined holistically. So what do? Well, you have to open up. You know, you have to open up. And even if you're structurally here, you can open up and you can breathe and you can learn to pay attention to that. And that comes right back to then you digest your food better, you know, so it's all
right. I imagine it as the vagus nerve is now, you know, running properly and not getting tweaked or pinched. And so if everything is lined out with good posture, then that vagus nerve is able to function all the way down to the ends where it's meeting my stomach, my intestines, my heart, my liver, my kidneys. It's getting to all those places and getting those messages on time when it's supposed to. And so to me, posture has so much to do with more than just neck pain.
Yeah, so much so. Let me give you an old example that actually has relevance to COVID, but Spanish flu, 1917 through 1919. Long time, because it took a long time for sick people to come back from, you know, going over to World War I sick and coming back sick, you know. So how did we treat those? Well, there weren't any antibiotics. So if you got the Spanish flu, did you automatically die? No, but you could, because you may get pneumonia because it really affected the lungs. So osteopaths and chiropractors had the best outcome for people who had severe pneumonia related to Spanish flu, because you didn't die from Spanish flu, you died of pneumonia. Okay. So what did we do to help those people? We pounded on them. Okay. We had slightly different methods, but you basically, people are drowning in their own juices, right? So what do you got to do? You got to get that stuff out. So how do you do that? You percuss the spine, percuss the lungs, you encourage them to, you know, cough it up, and you get air into those apices, which are really a puddle of scum. You need to get that, you know, air into there and open them up. And that was it. You know, it was getting people to open up their swamps and actually clear the sputum and breathe better. And the reason I say that has resonance to COVID-19, what did people die of in COVID-19? They didn't die of COVID-19. They died of pneumonia and a cytokine storm, which comes back to pro-inflammatory. So those people weren't healthy. Mm-hmm. The people that died weren't healthy. That's why the very old died and the very young had very minimal thing. If you were 40 years old and you had congestive heart failure, guess what? You're at risk. But if you're a normal 40-year-old, you didn't really have much risk. Now, what's normal right now? I don't really know. But the point is, it all intertwines, you know, good posture, breathing deep, being active, your risk of puddling in your lungs is less, you know.
And overall, yeah, just your health. It's not just what you eat. I have to talk to people about this all the time, because course, they come to me and they're like, all my problems are because I don't eat well. And so, you know, you're here to solve all my problems and help me eat better. And then I'll be perfectly healthy. And, you know, eating is something that we do all day, every day, and it changes through the months and the seasons. And when we travel, I mean, food is like, talk about woven through our lifestyle. And making food changes is really a big deal. I mean, that's a big deal. And I think that when people make food changes, they feel better. When they feel better, they're more encouraged to eat healthier foods, and just kind of all goes together. And so taking that first step to just maybe sit up a little straighter, if you can't, maybe get pounded on by a chiropractor.
And I say pounded on, we don't always pound on you, but anyway,
yeah.
That's something to do.
Yes. And I have never, except for the little thumper, which is not pounding, it's thumping, the electric, massage thumper that you've got. Yeah, there was always very gentle adjustments happening to me.
Yeah.
but yeah, so, for all of us who live in this busy world, in this busy rat race, sit up, don't crush your vagus nerve. Take deep breath. We did our breathing and did a lot of different breathing techniques to calm down. Is there any reason to go see a chiropractor if I'm not in pain?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm going to say absolutely yes. I think it's about function. It's not about pain. You know, we talk about inflammation again. You don't need to be hurting and be having significant problems with that pro-inflammation causing heart disease and leading to kidney damage or the onset of type 2 diabetes. It's inflammation. You're not necessarily hurting. And I'm not saying I'm going to cure all that or treat all that. But if you're moving better, you're going to be less inflamed. That's just part of it. Because if you're pinched, if you have a joint that's pinched, that may not hurt, but it may be inflamed. And that's just one more stick on the fire.
So it may not hurt. So getting checked out by a chiropractor periodically, like, because I normally wait until it hurts. And then I go, oh, no, I think this is something I need to see a chiropractor for. And then I go running in and say, OK, fix my problem I'm having currently. And I don't really think about seeing a chiropractor for maintenance.
Yeah. And again, people are afraid of that term maintenance, and, you know, insurance companies don't pay for maintenance unless it's a medical maintenance, like hypertension, you're taking medication, that's maintenance, although it's diet and lifestyle related, but anyway. Yes, it's, I call it get a tune-up, you know, come in, when you came to see me, I used a machine on you, which is not real common, but it taps on you to assess how well your spinal joints are moving. Where you're not moving well, I tap on you more. If you're still not moving well, I manually manipulate those joints to make them move better. I'm not necessarily focused on, oh, your SI joint, how's it doing? That's the only thing. That's all I'm going to address. I look at the whole thing, and I may not say it to you at that point, but I'm treating full spine, even if you're there for your sacral abdomen or your headache or whatever it is.
Right. Excellent. Well, thank you so much for joining me for this episode. I think that people are really going to learn a lot about the benefits of working with a chiropractor, and that it's not that scary, because I've done it. It didn't hurt. Where can people find you?
Well, I am now at Spellmeyer Chiropractic, which is in Hillsboro. If you Google my name, it'll be my name, but it will say it's Spellmeyer Chiropractic. And I've been there since June of last year. Prior to that, I was somewhere else for 25 years, and that's gone. So if you see another address that pops up, that's not me anymore. I'm not there anymore. So.
All right. Well, you'll be at Spellmeyer Chiropractic for the next 25 years. Yeah.
I almost 63. So that may not be true.
Oh, well, it has definitely been a pleasure getting to work with you and getting to talk with you today. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for inviting me, and this was a new experience for me, but a good experience.
Thank you for joining us today. We are here to share our stories and our expertise with you so that you can eat well, stress less about food, and find smarter, not harder ways to nourish yourself and the ones you love.
If you have a topic you'd like us to discuss or anything you'd like to share, send us an email or connect with us on social media. Links are all in the show notes. Download the Eating is a Lifestyle app now, available in the App Store. You can help us spread these messages by telling a friend about this podcast and sharing on social media.
Until next time, eat well and enjoy your life with food too.